Joy of Six, Six of the Best, Hit for Six, Six Education. We may lack six appeal, but we have three of the journalists who covered Sunday's huge win at West Ham to discuss the victory, talk about the players who shone, and what the result means to the title challenge. This is the Arsenal Beat. I'm Mark Membrines from PA, and today I'm joined by Sam Dean of The Telegraph and ESPN's James Ollie to analyse an unexpectedly memorable day in East London as Arsenal kept up with the top two by smashing the Irons 6-0. Given it is our Monday review show, we will round things off with another game of Guess the Gooner 2. Right, guys, I always find it hard to host and ask questions when Arsenal are actually good, but we'll try our best, won't we? James, I'll come to you first. Your match report was about redemption and correcting mistakes of the past. So what did Sunday's win say about the progression Arsenal have made in the last year or so?
Well, I think we have to probably look at it in the context of them needing to demonstrate the consistency to win the league. And I think one of the things that I took from yesterday is that they're getting very effective at using specific past disappointments to really sharpen their minds and focus the level of performance. So it was something that Mikel pointed out after the Nottingham Forest game, which obviously was another game where they'd had a recent kind of lineage of bad performances. They got knocked out of the FA Cup there. It was probably the angriest Arteta was in the Amazon documentary. They obviously technically lost the league there last season. And he talked in the build-up to that game about how the players were discussing going back to the City Ground and needing to sort of redouble their efforts, refocus their minds on the specific task at hand. And it felt a little bit like that again yesterday, you know. And there was a lot of, you could find a lot of sort of through lines through West Ham. Obviously, they won the reverse fixture. They knocked them out of the League Cup this season. And then obviously the corresponding fixture last season was one of the first games where it all started to unravel. And, you know, even granular detail down to Saka missing a penalty and then yesterday he converts it. They seem to be, I think for a while it felt as though Arteta was kind of coming up with these, you know, crazy team talks that obviously got a lot of traction in the Amazon doc. But it feels as much now that the players are kind of taking that responsibility over. And you can imagine that Declan Rice was front and centre in the week building up to that game. You know, obviously, again, with his own sort of background and history of the West Ham, wanting to go back and not necessarily prove a point because I think he has a genuine affection for the club. But obviously, he did get a bit of a checkered reception when they went back last time. And obviously, that happened early on in the game yesterday. So, I think there's a genuine determination there that I think is really impressive. You know, not just to prove that last season was an outlier and that, you know, City and Liverpool are just going to sort of restore the natural order this season, which of course still may happen. But I think what will really encourage Arteta is that there's that character that title winning teams need. And if they've got the character and they've got the quality, they're going to go an awfully long way and they're going to go very close. Not to say they're going to win it, but you don't see yet any sign that they're going to crack and falter, having had their wobble early on in the season. And it happened, you know, around Christmas time, early enough when you've still got time to recover.
Sam, quite a difficult question for you. Who's the best player on the pitch yesterday?
I don't think it's that tricky a question. I think the answer is that man, Martin Odegaard. I know he didn't get on the score sheet, but I thought his performance as ever, really, and certainly as has been the case, I think probably for the last 8 weeks, really, aside from the collective blip, I think Odegaard set the tone. He was the first player on record, according to Opta, to complete 100 passes, create at least 5 chances and assist more than 1 goal in the same Premier League match. So this really was a sort of playmaking tour de force from Arsenal's captain. And also, a few things I liked about it. One, just the sort of the general level of creativity, which is what you'd always expect from him. And two, I don't know if you guys noticed when Ethan Wanneri came on, it seemed like Odegaard was simply just trying to pass the ball to Wanneri and welcome him into the game. And even his first pass, he kind of rolled at him gently with his studs and then stood back, like, you know, here you go, son, the stage is yours. And I thought that was both quite nice and good leadership, and also interesting because obviously of all the players who know what it's like to be 16 playing on a big stage, it's Martin Odegaard. So that felt to me like a captain being a good captain, and the performance was a playmaker being a good playmaker. And, you know, as we all know, when Martin Odegaard plays well, Arsenal look a lot better. And I think he's been great for a little while now. Obviously, shout out to Saka. I think he just looked devastating. I think that second goal he scored when he just cut inside Agüero, just smashed it near post, was just the sort of goal he's now adding to his repertoire. And obviously, he's now hit 100 goals and assists for Arsenal, which feels extraordinary given his age. And I don't know if you guys have watched those back. There's a few clips going around of all of those goals and assists sort of compiled. And it's amazing. You can almost see him growing from boy to man with those goals. And if you remember the goals he used to score when he first started, the sort of more curlers or like getting into the back post. And then gradually he's added in that power, that pace and that ability to just go past people and just smash it. I think he's really he's become a sort of physical force that he obviously wasn't when he first broke through, and that development was very much underlined yesterday. So those two stood out. Obviously Rice completely dominated the midfield as you'd expect, but it was Odegaard and Saka who stood out for me.
James, Sam mentioned Declan Rice there towards the end of his answer. It strikes me as he's a big game player, isn't he, for Arsenal? I can't really remember the last time Arsenal went out and bought in a player that you then, when you played them in the big games, you could almost expect a performance. You could expect them to rise to the occasion. And I know he's cost him £105 million, so arguably he should be doing that. But can you think of a parallel and just how good has he been?
Well, they haven't habitually actually spent big money very well. I mean, if you think about some of their, I mean, obviously there's the Nicolas Pepe is the most, you know, the club record signing up until last summer. And I mean, you could even argue the jury's still out on Kai Havertz. Obviously, it was a big outlay. Lacazette might get a pass mark for that. Aubameyang, I suppose, probably gets a pass mark, even though the way that ended. I mean, they're not, I don't know, they don't have a track record of spending big money very well. And I think last summer, even though you could see the fit, obviously it made so much sense for Declan Rice to go to Arsenal on sort of all parties really. There was still perhaps a sense that they were paying quite a lot for a player who I still think, you know, there's a bit of revisionism maybe that I think Rice in the England team is not quite the all dominating force. I mean, I'll give you an example. Like, I know that there are agents overseas who I speak to who weren't entirely convinced by Rice last summer. And I'm talking about at the very highest £100 million level. He's obviously a very good player. But I know speaking to people at Chelsea, for example, there was a divide at Chelsea about whether technically he was good enough to warrant that kind of fee, which is one of the reasons why when there was a change of ownership, without revealing who I'm specifically talking about here, there was a decision not to pursue him. So I think he's exceeded expectations in that regard. I mean, one of the things I asked Mikel yesterday was just about, because obviously he's on, you know, now he's on corners. And in his answer, Arteta was saying that, oh, you know, he's taking corners for England, which, having covered England for 15 years, I can't, maybe he has. I'm going to have to look this up, but I can't remember Rice taking many. Mark, you've obviously done a lot of England as well. Can you remember a time when Rice was taking corners?
I think I've seen Harry Kane take more corners for England than Declan Rice, put it that way.
Yeah, I mean, I know he has, you know, he has for West Ham on occasion. He's taken free kicks, I think, for West Ham in the past. But it does feel as though, you know, I remember interviewing Rice in LA, and I know Sam Kai did as well. But like, he was talking about then, you know, oh, Mikel's unlocking new parts of my game and he's making me sort of reimagine the game. And it's the sort of thing that you imagine a new signing is going to say about a coach who's quite well regarded, right? But it's kind of happening. You know, we're seeing Declan Rice influence the game in a way that I don't think many imagined. You know, him playing more as an eight, as a six, that he has done on occasion this season. The late goals that he scored, You know, it's not something you associate with him. Luton, the winner at Luton, late goal against United, goal late-ish on against Chelsea to get them back into it. And now set pieces. You know, he's now taking corners and free kicks very effectively. And, you know, I think if there were some reservations about the fee in terms of, well, have they bought a kind of, not a stopper, because I think that's derogatory to what Declan Rice did at West Ham, but if they've bought a kind of more limited player, someone who gives them that authority and that command of central areas of the pitch, well, he's way more than that. And he's way more versatile than that. And I think that's been the biggest surprise, perhaps. And that he's done it so quickly, you know, that he's adjusted and acclimatised so quickly to what's obviously a very different style to what he's been used to under David Moyes at West Ham.
Obviously, this fixture last year, we mentioned earlier, was the 2-2 draw and kind of the start of the unravelling for Arsenal. And if you remember, and I'm sure listeners will too, is Arsenal 2-0 up and cruising when Thomas Partey tried a little flick in his own half with his back sort of facing his own goal, trying to flick it past Rice, who went on to win the ball, and West Ham won a penalty and the game changed from there. I can't think of one example of Rice taking that sort of risk this season, whether it comes off or not. I just can't think of him doing that. I don't think he's that kind of player. And obviously, some people would argue that that is why Arsenal have perhaps been a bit less expansive this season, because they've got a player there who takes fewer risks on the ball. But the fact that he's so secure and so steady, I think makes a huge difference to sort of the general defensive stability of this team, and the way that, especially in big games, Arsenal's midfield has just shut down the opposition. And there was a really nice piece by my colleague Daniel Zakiri on the Telegraph before this game, looking at the sort of the numbers behind Arsenal's campaign and compared to last year. And one thing he mentioned was the difference between Partey and Rice. And it's a bit number heavy, but bear with me for a second. So last season, Thomas Partey played 4.45 progressive passes per game. So he was zipping it forward through the lines on average 4.45 times a game. This year, Rice is doing 3.52. So it's less. He's taking less risks. He's passing forward less. Obviously, I think people would say that that's maybe why Arsenal aren't quite so thrilling to watch. But when Rice brings everything else and there's no risk, you can't really argue against it. And I thought yesterday's performance with him was just, after Arsenal took the lead, it was like he decided, right, nothing silly now, which is obviously in direct contrast to Partey in the same game last season.
It's a hard one to say, but given he's 25, he's played for England in major finals and major tournaments, he's won things with West Ham, but also faced the adversity with West Ham as well of being the man that's basically dragged them over the line to keep them up. I don't think there could have been a more surefire successful signing for me. I know they paid a lot of money for him, but it just always felt like it was going to work. Just one more, James, on that, on the game on Sunday. Is it a statement win for Arsenal in the sense that City and Liverpool will sit up and be like, oh, well, you know, we've got to take notice? Or is it just we've got to look at it as three more points in their quest to win the title?
I think there were quite a few people who probably of an Arsenal hue who were going to that game yesterday thinking, oh, here we go. You know, they're going to, yeah, West Ham haven't won in six. And, you know, yeah, they've beaten Liverpool, but can they back it up? And, you know, while that's a sort of typical fan kind of pessimism or fan fear, if you like, I do think that, you know, there are other clubs in the title race who probably think that way about sides who've not lasted the distance. And I think what Arsenal are proving, or starting to prove, I'm conscious of saying they're proving it in mid-February when we could be sat here in April and they've done the same thing as last season. But, you know, what the signs are very promising, that they are showing the kind of character and durability that they're going to need and that they didn't have last season. And I think it's probably not so much a statement as more a quiet tap on the shoulder, if you like, for City and Liverpool to kind of say, we're not going anywhere. You can't rely on us faltering. Now, you may go and win it. You may go and win every game from here. And obviously, if either of those two sides do, then they win the title. Or they finish above Arsenal anyway. So that's the statement for me, I think, is that this is a team that's trying to say, we're serious, we're not going to go anywhere. We may not, we may ultimately not be good enough, but it's not going to be a case of shooting ourselves in the foot and falling short because of our own sort of fallibility. I mean, I'm still, having said that, if you kind of say, take a step back from it, you still have to say that Man City are favourites to win the league. You'd still have to say Arsenal are probably more likely to finish third than anywhere else because of the quality of the two sides above them. But if we're talking about teams that, you know, need to prove they can last the pace, then that is certainly a question still of Liverpool. You know, this, I know the manager's been there and done it. They've obviously got players who've won everything there before, but we are talking about a you know, newly constructed Liverpool side that is quite a way ahead of schedule. And a lot of those players, obviously in the Premier League, have not gone and done it. So, you know, they have the same questions to answer. So, when you're winning 6-0 away, West Ham have sort of, you know, an up and down team, mid table team, I suppose, if you like. Although they've, you know, some weeks they look like they're European. Well, they are, well, Champions of Europe. They were singing yesterday, and some weeks they look like relegation fodder. But if you're going to a team that's just sort of a proper Premier League staple like West Ham and you're winning six, I think that just says to the rivals, you can't win on a weekend and just expect we're going to fall short.
We mentioned the redemption arc, and Sam, you've already touched on Saka being a key part of that, given the missed penalty at the London Stadium last season. We've seen for years now that the courage and determination he always seemingly possessed, and Arteta was asked yesterday by Kaya what he had to say about another eye-catching Saka performance.
His age, the position and consistency, normally they don't go in the same line. And he's proven everybody wrong, you know, that he can do it. What he's done today as well, I had doubts whether he was going to take it or not because of what happened, but it shows you as well how mature he is and as well how determined he is to go to the next level.
I think we all kind of agree with what Arteta said there, chaps, won't we? But Sam, is there a case now that Saka is almost a little bit taken for granted, his goals, assists and the sheer just amount of minutes that he plays?
Yeah, I think so. I think it was funny at the start of this season, people were kind of, certainly some Arsenal fans were saying, oh, he's not at his best. But if you looked at the numbers he was producing, they were still sort of, he's always delivering the end product. And I think that's what's always made him stand out compared to other young players coming through. I think with most, generally with most sort of young wingers, the skill and the flourishes are there first and the end product comes later. With Saka, the end product has always been there and he's added the skill and the speed to that. That's what's made him stand out and that's what's made him such an important part of this sort of Arteta project, revolution, rebuild, whatever you want to call it. Just to be a bit more granular and tactico on yesterday, and I might get this all horribly wrong, and people with better tactical understanding than me will, I'm sure, correct me on this, but Arsenal flipped the way they normally play yesterday. They had Ben White coming inside into midfield playing that Zinchenko role rather than the left back, who in this case was Kivioran. As Zinchenko himself has explained before, when he tucks in from the left back, it's designed in part to create space and 1v1s for Martinelli on that side. Saka's never really had that. Ben White doesn't really do that in the same way normally. So Saka's got less space and less 1v1s. Yesterday with White coming in, Ben Johnson, who played left wing for West Ham, was going with him. And that meant that Saka had all this time and all this space. And it was the first time I can really remember him getting the ball that frequently and that much space in a game. And he was just killing West Ham. There was a space in a... There was a period of about 10, 15 minutes towards the end of the first half when he just sort of... He could have scored 4 or 5 goals in about 7 minutes. Like, he was just absolutely destroying them. And on the flip side, Martinelli had probably one of his quietest games for a while, despite Arsenal's 6-0 win. And I feel like that way they flipped it to sort of bring White in and keep Kivior out of the midfield really benefited Saka. And sort of, I think that was an element of surprise for West Ham, which David Moyes' side couldn't really handle. And by the time they got to grips with it, it was far, far too late.
Scored his 50th goal as well yesterday. But James, is it a strange one to have a player that produces these moments, produces these goals and assists, but he's also... Maisie definitely agrees. I'll start that bit again.
Possibly the best contribution so far, I think.
James, it was his 50th goal for Arsenal yesterday. We see all these goals and assists, but there's an attritional level to Saka as well, isn't there? All the minutes he plays, the number of kicks he takes during a game, that can be overlooked a lot of the time, can't it? You don't really get those numbers without that side of the game as well, I don't think, do you?
No, and I'm going to make a really ill-advised comparison, although it's one that he made. I remember interviewing him a few years ago when he won, must have been young player at the London Football Awards, and I think he was talking then about looking at Cristiano Ronaldo and the way that his attitude as a younger player and there are, I think there are similarities just purely in the sense of it. I mean, look, his goal and assist return is got some way to go to get to Ronaldo's sort of level of consistency, but I think there are parallels in the way that he dusts himself down and gets on with it. And Ronaldo certainly did that from a very young age, that he kind of knew. I mean, look, Ronaldo overplayed a lot, didn't he, at that age? And he was all about step overs and messing about with the ball and whatever. And so, you know, Saka doesn't do that, but in the way that he's trying to beat players 1v1 and he's going to get taken out a lot, but just gets on with it and, you know, keeps going and keeps going and keeps going. He has that kind of relentlessness about him. And I would say also for the second goal, his second goal yesterday, even though obviously West Ham are a long beaten team by that stage, when he cut inside on his left foot, there was an absolute inevitability about that goal that you don't get with many players. You know, it was just... I remember when he cut inside and he was lining up to shoot, you just thought, well, you might as well all go back to the halfway line now, isn't it? You should just call this a goal and let's just, you know, move on with our lives. It just strikes me that all the football that I've seen live anyway, that there are very few players that have that aura about them, that the inevitability in the final third is a very rare thing to have, and he's got it. And look, I mean, we've all spoken to him numerous times since he broke into the team. I think, Mark, you were there when he did that very first interview, Frankfurt away, a few years ago. And, you know, we've sort of seen him develop, come on then, and obviously Sam's spoken very well about how he's done that. He's got the right mentality. And I think it's why... I do think it's why there's been this whole sort of debate about, you know, PGMOL, and Arsenal have sort of made this thing about representations in the past, not necessarily when some people reported them, to talk about how maybe he needs a little bit more protection, or maybe he needs just, you know, referees just need to be cognizant of the fact that this is a guy who's going to get fouled a lot. And it's very difficult to make that point without sounding like you're just moaning and complaining. But I think that's the only thing that can stop him, really. You know, he's got the mentality, he's got the ability, he's obviously got the raw talent and enthusiasm and hunger for the game. It's just probably going to be injuries and whether somebody absolutely batters him that might derail him in his career. And obviously nobody wants to see that, because you know you want to see talents like that thrive. And I can't speak highly enough for him, really, on and off the pitch.
I'm on an absolute stats rampage today, lads. I've got some more for you. Let me just dig them out. Talking about the workload and what James says about the kind of toll and physical danger to Saka, I suppose that seems to be the one risk to him. Obviously, last week when Phil Foden scored a hat-trick, very base level, lowest common denominator debate all over social media was sort of, oh, Foden v Saka and all that rubbish that no one actually cares about. But what I did think it was interesting was sort of comparing how Foden and Saka have been used compared to each other. And I was quite struck by this, that Foden has made 151 league appearances, so 152 now, and Saka's made 158. So it's pretty much the same number of league appearances. But Saka, before this weekend, had played 12,500 minutes, and Foden had played fewer than 9,000 minutes. So the gap in terms of miles on the clock between those two is absolutely enormous. And obviously that's partly because Saka is more important to, or has been more important to Arsenal than Foden has been to City. And also because Arteta has had less quality options to rotate than Pep Guardiola has had. But given that Foden is more than a year older than Saka, and Saka has more than 4,000 minutes on the clock, you do have to look at that and think, you can only hope that at one point this doesn't take its toll. And obviously this is a negative point on a very positive day for Arsenal fans, but there have been plenty of examples in the past of players playing a lot of minutes at a very young age and effectively aging earlier. And given the physical impacts that Saka takes, given the amount he's playing, I think that's going to be one of the big priorities for Arsenal over the next few years, to find a way of lessening the load on him physically and sort of keeping him prepped and keeping him fresh in a way that City have done for Foden.
Just to build on that, because I did a piece about that at the end of last season, and Saka played, I just dug it out here, 3,131 Premier League minutes last season, which is more than any other City player, any City player at all. And Rodri was the most on 2,800. And I haven't got the full breakdown here, but if you go through the wingers, the comparable players in City's team, Saka played around 1,000 minutes more. Even someone like De Bruyne or Erling Haaland, he was playing like 1,000 minutes more, roughly, give or take. And that was my concern, I think, earlier in the season, was that, you know, Saka and Odegaard and Martinelli were so good last year that you sort of can't really expect them to hit that level again and rely on that solely to get you over the line against juggernauts. Well, obviously, most clearly City and the firepower that they have. You know, but at the moment, they're kind of producing again and they're finding a way to do it. But yeah, Sam's right. That you know, again, talking about comparisons, you sort of start to think about the way Jack Wilshere was overused when he was a younger age, and he took a lot of hits. He was playing central midfield, obviously a different position. But I remember that one season where Arsene kept almost every week near the end saying, oh, you know, he's in the red zone. And then you get there and he'd play 90 minutes and you'd be thinking, well, hang on a minute, how can he keep doing this? And obviously what happened with Jack was very sad. I'm not suggesting that's going to happen with Bukayo, but there's just a warning from history there that, you know, these top players who do take those hits, they do need to be managed more going forward. And the numbers sort of suggest that City are very, very effective at having, a tighter squad, but they've got 17, 18, 19 almost interchangeable, and that allows them to then rotate those players a little bit more often, so they're not clocking up 3,100 minutes in a Premier League season.
Yeah, I mean, yesterday, you know, Rice scoring a screamer, setting up two goals, Arsenal winning 6-0, El Nene and Cedric coming off the bench. But I think the biggest surprise was probably Saka getting a rest, wasn't it? Time now for Guess the Gooner, where I read out clues and facts about an Arsenal player, past or present, and it's up to James or Sam to shout in with who they think I'm talking about. Despite trying to bribe me with Madri yesterday, James, we will not be doing Bukayo Saka. So let's play Guess the Gooner. I have won top division titles in three countries, but none of them in my homeland. I have, however, won my own domestic title as a manager. I was capped 106 times by my country and scored 6 goals. I joined Arsenal in 2001 and went on to make 64 appearances for the club, scoring twice. I am a World Cup runner-up. I played in Scotland, England and Spain for the same clubs as Mikel Arteta.
I can't remember him ever playing in Scotland, and I might be totally wrong, but I know he's now a manager and he could very feasibly be a World Cup runner-up. Is it Silvinho?
It is not Silvinho. I have managed in Scotland, China and the Netherlands. It was in the Netherlands.
Oh, I know who you are.
Who am I?
You must be Giovanni Van Bronckhorst.
I am Giovanni Van Bronckhorst.
Come on!
Good. See, one. Now, I didn't say... I was on mute the whole time, so I was guessing and I got that.
Just shouting.
Sorry, nightmare. Absolutely. Technical nightmare.
We'll do Saka for you next time, mate. Thanks to James and Sam for joining me today on the review show. We'll be back on Thursday to preview the tricky trip, I suppose, to Burnley. Do remember to follow us on social media at the Arsenal Beat. And until then, stay safe, everyone.